Korsakov, we heard Mark Raisin, Ivan Kozlovsky, and just now Pavel Lisitsyan with the Bolshoi Theatre Orchestra and Chorus, conducted by Nikolai Golovanov. And that's it from me, Rob Cowan, for Sunday morning on BBC Radio 3. I'm so glad you could join me, and I look forward to presenting my next Sunday selection in a fortnight's time. But in the meantime, do please join James, who has some great choices ready for you for next Sunday, same time, 9 o'clock.
Sunday Morning with Rob Cowan is a unique production for BBC Radio 3 with studio production this morning by Lyndon Jones. A lost key and an accidental touch of cold hands in the dark. So begins one of the great romances in all opera, La Bohème. On BBC Radio 3, a celebrated Royal Opera production is rejuvenated for 2012. An exciting cast led by Joseph Calleja and Carmen Giannattasio, with Semyon Bychkov in the pit. That's Opera on 3, Saturday night at 6 o'clock on BBC Radio 3. Now it's 12 o'clock and time for Private Passions with Michael Barclay.
Celia Imrie has had, and still has, a flourishing and multifaceted acting career, from Calendar Girls to Miss Babs in Acorn Antiques, from Dinner Ladies to The Darling Buds of May, and she's currently on the stage in Michael Frayn's Noises Off. That must be quite fun to have a group of actors around you doing it every night and presumably being able to sort of vary just odd little things.
Not really.
No.
Not really. It's a fantastic team I'm with, actually, but it's very, very, very specifically written. Even the bits when we don't speak, it's like a sort of dance. So we have to really keep it to the letter, otherwise all hell breaks loose. But it is grand fun.
And then, of course, the other thing which I didn't mention here is, well, there's so many things, your long-term sort of partnership with Victoria Wood.
I know, aren't I lucky?
In any of those things, do you have an element of being able to improvise or to add in things?
Well, Michael and Victoria actually are very musical the way they write, actually, so that if you add the wrong extra syllable even, breaks the rhythm and ruins it. So actually, the words have to be very, very precise. There were one or two things we added in occasionally, phone work, I think I call it, in Acorn Antiques. But on the whole, Victoria writes very specifically too. But because we've worked together over the years, it is a wonderful feeling and you do work much faster, I think.
Has music always mattered to you?
Oh, yes. My mother played the violin, and my father used to Scottish dance, so the house was full of music. And, of course, my great love was ballet, and I wanted to be a ballet dancer. So I used to pretend I was on stage in the drawing room, you know, and fall over when no one was looking.
And you did play the piano a little bit?
I did. I wasn't very successful. And I suppose I thought once I knew the scales, I could go and sit and play, but my goodness, you can't unless you keep it going.
The first piece that you've chosen has an element of yearning to it, doesn't it? And it's a beautiful tune, almost neoclassical, but it has a romantic leaning.
Yes, a yearning, but hopeful as well as sad. But I think in the end, positive, don't you?
Absolutely.
What a gift to be able to play so effortlessly.
Leonard Bernstein played the solo piano in the slow movement of the Piano Concerto No. 2 in F, Opus 102 by Shostakovich with the New York Philharmonic Orchestra. Celia Emery, one of the things I was very struck by in your autobiography, which is called The Happy Hoofer, was you talked about wanting to be a dancer. And as a result of all of that, I guess, you had these difficulties with weight, as lots of young people do. Mm. And you were put in the hands of this, well, actually now notorious man called Sargent.
Yep.
And he was the one, I think, who believed in electroconvulsive therapy and putting people into insulin-induced comas. Mm. Mm.
I hope it wouldn't be allowed now. I mean, I don't quite know what goes on, but it's like a horror story, isn't it? And my memory is kind of quite ropey about it all, actually. And
perhaps just as well.
Yes, I hope so. Mm. But I am living proof that you can get yourself well. Mm. I want to insist that everybody knows that.
So what sort of age would you have been then?
14, when all that happened, because that's the sort of magic age when you can no longer be in a children's hospital. So I was surrounded by women who were really quite mentally ill. And probably the thing that really got me out of it was realising that I didn't want to be mad like the other people there, because it was quite distressing seeing them fighting with the nurses and things. And also I regret terribly the worry I put my mother through, because I can remember her coming across the forecourt to the hospital daily. I don't think anybody knew she used to come and visit me every day.
Your mother, as you said, played the violin, and I dare say this piece was prompted by that fact.
Oh, absolutely, yes. In fact, at quite an age, she used to go around old people's homes, but always I remember her with the sort of gypsy string to her bow, really. She danced while she played. It was wonderful. And Nigel Kennedy I've always loved. I remember we met at a do and he said, oh, I like you because you don't talk about how you do things. And I thought, well, I don't think you do either. And that's what I love, his sort of magic.
Thank you.
So stirring, isn't it? You can't stop smiling. And actually, we were both impossible to stay still during that as well. We were both conducting away, weren't we?
The finale of the Brahms Violin Concerto, played by Nigel Kennedy with the London Philharmonic Orchestra, conducted by Klaus Tennstedt. I suppose, Celia Imrie, that you must be quite fascinated always to see how music transforms your work, because very often music is the last thing that comes, especially on a movie. And yet, of course, it can set the tone. I mean, the music will tell you if somebody's going up a hill to meet their lover or to meet their doom. Sometimes both.
Yes, exactly. Or actually, if there's no music, you know something terrible is going to happen. The minute the music stops, watch out, because it invariably means there's going to be some sort of crash. But I often used to watch the Hollywood movies and wonder whether, when you had this beautiful film star who has got tears in her eyes, whether some kind director had played this fabulous flooding music in the background to her. Well, now that I know, probably not. Probably she had to imagine that and then the director put the music on afterwards. But it's a huge help. I mean, it does transform your whole mood, doesn't it?
In fact, I think this next piece, Celia, was used in a production you were in.
It was. In a marvellous play called Drama at Inish by Lennox Robinson. And my brilliant friend, Fidelis Morgan, directed it. And she used the music very cleverly in this particular bit, which is the end of Act One, going into the interval. I played Aunt Lizzie, who lives in a fantasy land, of her lost love, actually. And Eddie, played by David Walsh, is my nephew, I believe. And he's in love, too. But they're both sort of fantasists, really. And they're also very selfish. So I sit down and he sits beside me on his knees. And we're both going to tell each other about our loves. But of course, we can't be bothered to wait for the other person's story. All we want to do is to talk about our things. We're not remotely interested in the other person. So that eventually we're both telling our own story, not listening to each other at all. Both stories are going on. Meanwhile, this fabulous music is playing over it.
Thank you. Very charming music. It reminds me so often of, attention focuses around the big name, in this case Dvorak, obviously. And yet there are wonderful pieces by people who are perhaps slightly less famous, even though Suk was pretty famous.
Was he? I'd never heard of him before, I'm
ashamed to say. Yes, Joseph Suk. Oh, I mean, he studied with Dvorak.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a rather sad story, actually, because he married Dvorak's daughter, Otilka.
Uh-huh.
And he was devoted to Dvorak and mad about his young wife. And Dvorak died, and the following year, she, still very young, died of a heart condition.
Oh, dear.
So, and he never remarried. And he was a very good pianist and violinist. He played in a good quartet, and he just simply concentrated on that for the rest of his life.
Well, I wonder if this love song was for her. Because
it was,
it's
definitely,
so
yes.
Full of heart, and again, that word yearning, which really helped both of us when we were acting our life stories of our lost loves. So, how sad.
Number one from the Piano Pieces Opus 7, the love songs of Joseph Suk, played there very tenderly by Margaret Fingerhut. Celia Imrie, I think one of your latest roles has been in the best exotic Marigold Hotel.
Yes.
I think, if I'm right, I remember reading a rather wonderful book that it's based on by Debbie Mogarth, These Foolish Things, which is about sort of outsourcing care for the elderly.
It's such a marvellous idea, though, isn't it? I wonder if it will ever really happen. My son very sweetly said to me the other day, I won't ever put you in a home, Mum. And I was very pleased to hear him say that, but I wouldn't mind going to one in India, like Debbie's book.
And you, it all took place, or was filmed in Jaipur?
Udaipur mostly, I believe, and Jaipur, yes. So that you've got, actually, Udaipur was quite serene compared to Jaipur. Our director said, well, if you can imagine, Udaipur is Harrogate. When we get to Jaipur, that's Birmingham. Well, when we got to Jaipur, I said, John, you've got it all wrong. Udaipur might be Harrogate, but Jaipur is Catford. Now, I might get into trouble for that. The amount of traffic and mayhem going on, it was hugely different, but, of course, perfect for the film.
On now to... you've got two great singers, Celia Imrie, in your programme. And they're both, as it happens, well, in fact, three, if you include Shirley Bassey. But
yes.
They're both, and indeed possibly all three, rather wonderful on the stage.
Oh, yes. Well, we're going to hear Montserrat Caballé now, I think, aren't we? My darling friend Alan Bates took me to the Festival Hall to see her in person. And really, there's nothing so good. And we were right near the front. And she's a fabulously... what do you call it? Luxurious lady, I think, of a size, but just mesmerising on stage. And she was actually singing Spanish folk songs rather beautifully. And I promise you, she could have been 17 dancing around the stage. She was absolutely mesmeric, actually. And her voice, I find breathtaking. It always thrills me.
This is Depuis le Jour from Charpentier's Louise.
goes right up your spine, doesn't it? Almost you daren't breathe. But when she hits those top notes, you sort of sit up to go with her. But I suppose, like all these wonderful artists that we're listening to, like Leonard Bernstein, Nigel Kennedy and Montserrat Caballé, they make it sound and look so effortless. And I think that's true stuff.
Well, that's the secret of having a great technique to start with, isn't it?
Mm.
Depuis le jour, from Louise by Charpentier, Montserrat Caballé singing with the Barcelona Symphony Orchestra, conducted by Carlo Felice Cellario. Now we come, Celia Imrie, to the thing that was your passion for such a long time, and still is to a certain extent, which is, of course, ballet.
And I hope you'll forgive me if I get up and dance around the room, because I find it very difficult to keep still. In fact, I embarrassed some friends of mine once when we went to the planetarium, and they suddenly came on with the Blue Danube, and I actually did get out of my seat and dance up and down the aisle. I promise I won't, but it is absolutely thrilling, this bit.
What you've chosen is Prokofiev, but not Romeo and Juliet.
No, Cinderella. Actually, it was a toss-up between this and the Amorosa, which I love as well, but I find this every day uplifting. Exhilarating, isn't it? And it's got a sort of minor key through it. There's an element of doom about it, because I'm imagining it's the waltz leading up to 12 o'clock and we all know what's going to happen. So there's a sort of urgency and a sort of lookoutness about it.
An edge.
Yes, fabulous.
Vladimir Ashkenazy conducted the Cleveland Orchestra in Cinderella's Waltz from the end of Act One of Prokofiev's ballet Cinderella. So, Celia, just tell us a little bit about how things tend to happen, because one always gets the impression from actors that jobs come in sometimes almost a couple of weeks away and that you sometimes don't know what you're doing, and then suddenly something rather wonderful will land on your desk. Has it been that way for you?
But I sort of love not knowing, you see. I'm kind of thrilled by the absolute not knowing. In fact, I don't really like knowing to the end of the year what I'm going to do. I liken it to snakes and ladders in my book, actually. And I think that's right. You go up and you go down and you've no idea what's around the corner.
It must mean occasionally that you take something on and then something rather wonderful comes up you have to turn down.
Yes. It's all juggling. It's a gamble, actually, really. But then I like the horses, you see. That's from my mother. So I like to bet and hope it works out.
What's fascinating about that from the point of view of what we're going to hear next is it's so unlike opera, because in something like opera, people can tell you what they're doing in 4 years' time.
Mm.
And the opera we're going to hear is one of the great dramatic roles for any soprano, I guess. And we've already had Caballé, and now we're having Maria Callas.
Which I understand you saw, this production.
I did, actually, yes.
How? Well, you must have been about 1½,
weren't you? No, I was quite young, and it was with Tito Gobbi at the Opera House.
Fabulous.
And I was learning to be a singer, and even more embarrassing, I was taken backstage to meet Tito Gobbi and to sing. And as a young student, so, you know, I was at the Royal Academy of Music, so I had a baritone voice by then, but it wasn't wonderfully formed. But no, to see Callas and Gobbi was wonderful.
God, well, such marvellous actors, both of them. Mm. I'm afraid I'm not very well versed in opera. I love Puccini, and I love the story that it tells. But then, of course, you've got two fabulous actors.
Well, here you had Gobbi as the absolute incarnation of evil. He had this kind of warped look from glinting eyes, this lustful, dangerous look. And then you had Callas, of course, singing her heart out.
Mm.
So you only know this on record, then?
I'm afraid I do, yes. No. But I love that people are daring enough to be horrible. I mean, sometimes actors aren't, and when they are, it's thrilling.
This is music from Act Two, where Gobbi is taunting Callas, Floria Tosca, with the sound of her lover being marched outside, and he's saying he only has an hour to live, but you could spare him if you wanted. And that leads to Vici Date, where, of course, she says her prayer to God, asking for some way to be delivered from this.
Se la giurata fede debbo tradir, ne voglio altra mercede, ne voglio altra mercede.
che un'ora di vita.
You can feel the tension, the electricity between them.
She breaks your heart, doesn't she? Mm. Actually, having said it was only on record, of course, I've got this wonderful image of her in the film. There was a film of it, wasn't there, in her red velvet Empire line dress.
Well, I think that's probably the performance I saw at Covent Garden.
Mm.
Because you're quite right, that CD, I'd have been five, was 1953, yes. And I didn't have a baritone voice when I was five, I'm glad to say. But they later did it, as you say, at Covent Garden. And so I was at least 10 years older than that, so maybe even 17 or 18. But can you imagine, after hearing those two voices, going in as a fledgling singer and being asked to open your
voice? Did
you have to sing for him? Yes, in the dressing room.
Oh, my goodness.
I mean,
who made you do that? Your mother?
Well, somebody thought that I was doing me a great favour as a friend.
Oh, how difficult.
And it was a bit analogous to, in this instance, you know, going into the Sistine Chapel,
yes,
and seeing Michelangelo up on his scaffolding and him offering you the
paintbrush. Exactly. Oh, my goodness. How brave. But, no, the image, while we were listening, I can imagine her and him. Fabulous.
So we heard Maria Callas and Tito Gobbi with the orchestra of La Scala Milan, conducted by Victor de Sabata. Music from Tosca, Act 2 by Puccini. I'm really thrilled, Celia Imrie, that we're going to end up with some music from James Bond. And there's that marvellous thing in the music, which is in the best of the films, which is a slight tongue-in-cheek, as well as being dangerous and sexy.
Yes,
perfect. And that certainly applies here, doesn't it?
Certainly. Last week, actually, had the great thrill of being invited to lunch at the Science Museum, which I thought, how exciting, and sat in my place and looked to my left to see the nameplate. I couldn't believe my eyes, because there on the written card was Don Black. And he came and sat next to me and I said, so you're the Don Black. I can't tell you how thrilling it was, because he's a great hero. And gosh, the amount of songs he's written.
Lyrics.
And, lyrics, yes. Mm-hmm. And very modest man. But I just love this piece of music. It's so sassy and splendid and everything you said.
Diamonds are forever. They are all I need to please me. They can stimulate to tease me. They won't leave in the night. I've no fear that they might desert me. Diamonds are forever. Hold one up and then caress it. Touch it, stroke it and undress it. I can see every part, nothing hides in the heart to hurt me. I don't need love, for what good will love do me? Diamonds never lie to me, for when love's gone, they last on. Diamonds are forever, sparkling around my little finger. Diamonds linger. Men are mere mortals who are not worth going to your grave for. I don't need love, for what good will love do me? Diamonds never lie to me, for when love.
What a tantalising trio, John Barry, Don Black and Shirley Bassey. And also I always think it's rather marvellous the way a man can write lyrics and speak from the heart of a lot of women.
There are wonderful lines in there, actually.
Fabulous. Yeah, yeah. Fabulous.
We heard Shirley Bassey, who still performs with extraordinary verve. I saw it on BBC Television, her giving a couple of concerts quite recently, and they still had all
She's
of that.
A cracker, isn't she? Fabulous.
We heard Shirley Bassey singing the John Barry, Don Black number, Diamonds Are Forever, from the film. Well, Celia Imrie, many thanks for this. What's your next horizon, as it were, in terms of work, or do you not even know?
I don't know yet, actually, but the music that I've chosen today and any other music will take me with it, because you can't live without music, can you? It's just heavenly, and thank you so much for inviting me. It's been gorgeous.
Thank you.
Celia Imrie was talking to Michael Barclay. Well, next week at the same time, Michael's guest on Private Passions will be Professor David Phillips, President of the Royal Society of Chemistry. Private Passions is a classic arts production for BBC Radio 3. The producer of today's programme was Chris Marshall. And keeping film music in the frame,
As London becomes the international focus of attention, conductor Robert Ziegler and I, Mark Kermode, with the BBC Concert Orchestra, are going to look at the lasting legacy of London on film through music.
The international lineup of composers includes Bernard Herrmann, Alexandra Desplat, Howard Shore, Stephen Sondheim, Hans Zimmer, and Burt Bacharach. And we'll also hear from homegrown talents David Arnold, John Barry, and Michael Nyman.
You've probably guessed some of the films already: Alfie, The King's Speech, Ypres File, Hangover Square, Sherlock Holmes, and of course, we had to include Bond, James Bond.
And as a special treat, Pete Townsend and Jeff Beck will play along in a brand new arrangement of music from Quadrophenia.
That's our live evening concert here on BBC Radio 3 tomorrow night at 7:30.
BBC Radio 3, 90 to 93 FM on digital radio. And you can also listen to us live online. It's 1 minute past one. The news now read by David Cornett.
The Home Secretary, Theresa May, has warned judges that she'll consider changing the law if they ignore proposed new guidelines on how they should apply human rights legislation. She wants to make it harder for foreign criminals to use the right to a family life to avoid deportation. The government is expected to set out its plans when Parliament returns from recess tomorrow. The Spanish Prime Minister, Mariano Rajoy, has welcomed an agreement by Eurozone finance ministers to lend Spanish banks up to 100 billion euros to salvage a banking sector badly hit by a collapsed property market. Mr. Rajoy said the deal would benefit the whole of Europe. The Foreign Secretary, William Hague, has welcomed the move to support Spanish banks. This morning, the Chancellor, George Osborne, said the crisis in the Eurozone was killing off Britain's economic recovery. But Labour says Mr. Osborne shouldn't be blaming Europe for a recession Labour claims was made in Downing Street. The new leader of the exiled Syrian opposition movement, Abdel Basset Seder, has claimed that the rule of President Assad is nearing its end. Mr. Seder said recent massacres demonstrated that the government in Damascus was struggling. A senior Kenyan government minister, George Saitoti, and six other people have been killed in a helicopter crash. Witnesses say the aircraft burst into flames as it hit the ground outside the capital, Nairobi. The cause of the crash is not yet clear. The Environment Agency says just one flood warning remains in place in Mid Wales following the severe flooding yesterday. Around 1,000 people had to be evacuated after a month's worth of rain fell in a day, leaving homes and caravan parks near Aberystwyth flooded by up to 5 feet of water. And the weather today: there'll be heavy rain across the south of England this afternoon. Heavy showers will also affect central and southern Scotland and the northeast of England. Elsewhere it'll be mainly dry with sunny spells. Temperatures will reach highs of 11 Celsius in Edinburgh, 14 in Cardiff, 15 in Belfast and 17 in London. BBC News and weather at 3 minutes past one.
And it was read by David Cornett. Time now on Radio 3 for today's early music show. It's presented by Lucy Skeeping.
Welcome to the show and our second programme of highlights from a concert given at St John's Smith Square in London, part of the 2012 Lufthansa Festival of Baroque Music. It's given by Musica ad Rainham, directed by the Dutch flautist Jed Wentz, and their programme focused mainly on the works of François Couperin, a composer whose style reflects the musical developments that took place between those two great French kings, Louis XIV and XV. They began with a suite from a collection Couperin entitled Les Nations, because each piece in it represents a different national style. This selection of movements is taken from La Francoise, and as was the fashion of the time, they're in the style of favourite court dances. Before the concert, I asked Jed Wentz how significant this was. Would the audience have recognised these dances?
Absolutely, without a doubt. They had to dance in Versailles. They had dancing lessons every day. And the balls were nothing like the kind of balls that you see in films, now costumed films, where people are having delightful conversation while 30 or 40 people are up on the floor. Really, two people were dancing and the entire court was watching. Those two people would sit down and another two would dance, and it would go on for hours and hours, and you had to dance well or else you were out. So it was a completely different understanding of control, controlling the body, making very difficult things seem easy. And I have to say that Couperin's music is tremendously, tremendously difficult. And yet when you play it well, it sounds like you can sight read it. And that is very, very much the aesthetic of the French court. You do tremendously difficult things, very, very controlled, very precise, and you do it as if you're improvising.
Jed Wentz, who directs Musica Ad Renum. So, two courants to start, followed by a gentle saraband, a jig, a chaconne, a gavotte, and finally a brisk minuet.